Welcome to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives. I'm Nell McCormack-Abom, alongside my co-host, Jim Hone, Central Pennsylvania Regional President of PNC Bank.
Well, thanks, Nell. It's great to be here. PNC C-Speak, the language of executives, is a podcast that features local executives talking about relevant and timely business topics. This knowledge-sharing platform showcases leaders with forward-thinking approaches that disrupt the status quo and cause us to think differently.
Our guest today is Dr. Karen Kim, Dean at Penn State College of Medicine in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Penn State College of Medicine is the medical school of Pennsylvania State University, a public university system. Welcome to PNC C-Speak, Dr. Kim.
Thank you, Jim and Nell. I'm so glad to be here today.
Karen, we're delighted to have you here with us today. And talking with you, you've developed over the course of your career in life something you call your opportunity lens. You know, Nell and I are very curious, looking through that lens, what drew you to Penn State and the College of Medicine?
Well, thanks for that question. I mean, there's so many reasons why I'm happy to be here. But I will have to tell you that when I was first approached to consider this position as Dean of the College of Medicine, I frankly knew very little about the school and actually didn't even know that Penn State University had a medical school. And in a very understated way, I have just been really, really surprised by the amazing opportunity to lead this School of Medicine. So let me tell you that I have always focused my career on thinking about ways to have more meaningful impact. And so I have not really shaped my career to think someday I'm going to be dean. But sort of in the natural progression of my career, it seemed like this was the next place to go, to be able to train the next generation of students to practice, to train the next generation of scholars who are really interested in defining how we think about medicine and biology at the intersection of health, and finally to think about how we can really broadly engage our community in a meaningful way. And so when I think about the opportunities for Penn State College of Medicine, I'm going to focus on three areas. One is my work in serving vulnerable and underserved populations really led me to this college because of the opportunity to think about rural health. This is an area of tremendous need. Only about 5% of all physicians practice in rural health. And between the Penn State College of Medicine and Penn State Health, we're one of the academic centers that actually live in the community that we want to serve. So unlike other places that might helicopter in, we kind of live, work, and play with this rural community, and it's really important to be able to give back.
Yeah, I think you have to imagine that because you're coming from Chicago, which is a very large metropolitan area, and you're coming to Hershey, Pennsylvania, where are there more cows than people? Probably not anymore, but there used to be. I just want to give a little bit of background to our listeners about you because your career path has truly been fascinating. You began as a bench researcher, then you became a game changer in Chicago, leading a nonprofit focused on health equity for Asian and underserved populations, and you were a leading researcher at the University of Chicago. Now you have the chance as dean here at Hershey to shape the next generation of doctors. We're curious about what leadership principles guide you, if you had to describe that leadership style.
Well, Nell, thanks for the question. And again, you mentioned that I had started a nonprofit almost 25 years ago. And I would say the biggest leadership lessons that I've learned is trying to sustain a nonprofit organization for that long, not to chase the money, to be very mission-focused, to be able to maintain and grow staff, and to be able to be very visionary. And those are lessons that I think are really important for leadership. I would say that there are some critical components that I have found important for longitudinal and sustainable success. One is always to do the right thing. And that is, you know, for me, that's always been to serve with humility and equity and to really think about vulnerable populations and how do we give voice to those who have no voice. I think it's important to lead by example. So if you're going to ask for somebody to do something, to make sure that you reflect that behavior and exhibit that type of behavior in the way that you lead. I think it's critically important to find talent around you and then to trust that talent and to be fully accountable for what you say. And these are lessons that I think when you look at really strong leaders, there's usually common themes around high level of accountability and transparency and really doing what you say that you're going to do.
I remember in our conversation earlier, you said your dad told you, you don't need to say it, just do it.
That's absolutely right. And I try to live by that. You know, too often we have these large aspirational goals. We want people to get from A to B. We talk about it, and so rarely is that implemented. And so I think it's just important that you set goals, but that you actually have a team around you to operationalize those goals and actually to accomplish, you know, whatever it is that you set out to do.
You're in a very exclusive club. I believe there's 157 deans of colleges of medicine and school across the United States, and certainly you're one of those. So that is a pretty small clique of talented individuals. But in your role, you're dealing with very talented individuals too, whether they be the students, whether they be the faculty, whether they be the physicians. And I'm curious about how your leadership style needs to modify, if at all, when you're dealing with these accomplished individuals.
I think that sort of this shared governance model is important in that you make decisions based on, one, kind of the people that you're working with, but also being very inclusive in that decision making. Ultimately, as dean, you have to make the final decision. But being able to get sort of collective input in trying to decide how to prioritize and allocate resources is really critical to success. And I think that throughout my career, I've always surrounded myself with really strong thought leaders and really leaned on their, you know, shared opinions to be able to help lead a path forward.
But that being said, you know, I'm sure that like many individuals, these are people, and there's a point in time where conflict arises as well. And I know that something that you've described is that you're comfortable with, maybe not want, but is conflict. And you're very comfortable with the idea of conflict resolution. Can you walk us down a little bit of your path about your philosophy or tactics and how to deal with conflict?
Yeah, I would say that I was not always comfortable with conflict. But I served as the University of Chicago ombuds in our biological science division for a very long time. And that's not a skill that you learn just by reading a book.
And you have
so
to live it.
You have to live it. And the first time I remember, I heard some egregious story from a faculty member who really was conflicted with decisions made by their chair. And I was livid when I heard how unfair this person was treated. I went running straight to my dean saying, pants on fire, this is unacceptable. And he just calmly asked me, well, did you hear the other side of the story? And I'm thinking to myself, could there be another side to this story? And so the first lesson is, always listen to both sides of the story because they're often very different. And I think the ability for conflict resolution to find that middle ground and that win-win and the creative solutions, often when there's conflict, it's that people want something that they haven't been able to articulate. And taking the time to figure out what is motivating or driving that conflict is where you really come out on the other end with really creative solutions. So I think that I would much rather have a conflict in front of me to try to figure out creative solutions and that win-win, then have the avoidance of conflict, which then leads to much better, bigger problems.
But here's the thing. You have to create within your organization a safe space for people to be honest
yep.
and to tell you what they think, and then to be able to listen to that and really hear what they said and put it into practice. How do you create within your organizations a safe space for listening and sharing that feedback?
You know, I think that, first of all, you model behavior of trust. You listen carefully and you know, active listening. You create very consistent messaging. You really make expectations clear for how you come into sort of a challenged conversation. And then you let those individuals get into that space of working together to try to craft a solution. Now, not everyone always wins, but that's okay. You know, just being able to be heard is sometimes half the battle.
And are you comfortable bringing the hammer down when you have to?
One of my favorite lessons that I heard in a program is that no is a complete sentence. And too often we fill it with noise. So, yes, I am.
Yes, no is a complete sentence.
The doctor is in.
That's right.
we've heard a common theme amongst several of our guests is that even when there is conflict or bringing people to the table, oftentimes you can get people to agree, in your words, to kind of the win-win situation of the ultimate destination. But oftentimes it's the path to get there that is the point of differentiation. And bringing folks together for that common cause is something that usually works. I'm curious, in terms of that common cause, and especially being at Penn State and at the Penn State Health and the School of Medicine, how does that common cause of culture, how does that permeate in terms of what you're seeing and what you see at Penn State, even in comparison to the University of Chicago?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to compare these two institutions. Mm-hmm. But I think the overarching theme that is really important when we want to move people is to have sort of a North Star that everyone can be aligned around. Mm-hmm. So if you have a shared vision and mission, it's a lot easier for people to buy into some of the tough decisions. But if you don't articulate where you're clearly trying to go, I think then they say that any way will get you there. And so getting people to sort of convene around and being excited around sort of their North Star together is important. And I see that between both the College of Medicine and Penn State Health right now. As you know, that they, in the last few years, they have had divided leadership. And being able to sort of pull together common resources and common language for kind of the constituents across both mm-hmm. of these large, units is really critical for us to be able to figure out how to strategically plan together.
You know, time is a non-renewable resource, and it faces all of us every day, but particularly folks in leadership positions for very large organizations like you're running. When it comes to Penn State Health, the College of Medicine being integrated into the Penn State University, I recall that you had told us your mom said everyone has 24 hours in a day. Use them wisely. But how do you do that for yourself as an executive, making the time that you need for the vision of the mission-driven stuff you want to do, the end goal, the day-to-day operation? But then also, you're a person, Karen, right? You have needs, too, in terms of having time to just reflect, enjoy life, get to know Central Pennsylvania. How do you as a leader manage your time?
I think what is critical for a leader is to surround yourself by a really talented team and make your expectations very clear. Make sure that you have shared goals, and then delegate. And if you don't do that, you really cannot achieve. You really are stuck in terms of if you have to drive every single decision because you think you're the sole leader, you're really not going to get very far. And so I feel like one of my talents, and I see this at the Penn State College of Medicine, we have some really phenomenal leaders across the college. And I rely on them. And I think leadership is not about knowing everything, but knowing who knows more than you in that area and then trusting them once you have a shared, aligned vision to do that work. So delegation is the only way, in my mind, that you can get through kind of a normal day. The other principle is that there are a lot of visionary leaders, but you need implementers to actually get things done. And so I try to surround myself with really problem solvers, not problem bringers, people who can operationalize and implement a vision so we actually move the needle forward rather than just think about all the things that we hope that we can accomplish someday. And I think for me, that's how I honor my mother's words about, everyone has the same 24 hours a day and to use it wisely. I think the wise use of talent around you is critical.
You've talked about you are an implementer and you focus on making things better. Is that what you look for in other talent? You may have just alluded to.
Yeah, I think I categorize people into two categories. One is problem bringers and one is problem solvers. And it's very easy to bring problems. And we have, I think in any institution that's complex, there's a lot of problems. But what I really look for are proactive, solution-oriented people who are problem solvers.
Mm-hmm. So is that in the interview process? I'm thinking when you're recruiting your top talent, the folks you want leading the college in various aspects and divisions, how do you elicit that in an interview? Well, first of all, you've come to this new organization. So you first have to figure out, is Jim a problem solver or a problem bringer, right? But then if you think Jim needs to go, I'm sorry, Jim, I'm picking on you
there,
or Nell needs to go, how do you recruit that next person to come along?
I don't know about how I'm going to recruit, but I think it's pretty black and white how you categorize people. And you know, it's so easy when you're having conversations, those individuals who have who are mission driven and aspirational and then have a track record of implementing programs or research. And then you have the others who may be sitting there waiting for handouts because they don't feel like they have enough. Those individuals kind of present themselves very quickly. And so I have always prided myself in surrounding myself by very glass half full mindset, but also very pragmatic in terms of what we can get done.
Is it okay to fail?
I fail often and I fail fast. And so I don't think that you can be – anybody who's telling you that they haven't failed is someone who's not really leading anything. It is a hallmark of leadership is to be able to fail, learn from that failure, hopefully fail quickly and move on.
Because if you're looking to make things better, that means you're – unless there is perfect, and there may be perfect today, but we know that the same perfect is not perfect tomorrow, you're going to have to change. And there is, and to your point, change, implement, but if you're going to do it, and if you're going to fail, fail fast.
That's right.
Move on to the next best
thing.
That's right.
Is there an example you can give of that just off the top of your head? Was there a time where you were like, I was so sure this was the right thing, and it turned out to be the wrong thing, and I had to own it, but I've learned – from it. I'm putting you on the spot little bit because I hadn't prepared you in any way for that.
Oh, no. That's okay. There's number of failures. I'll say that in my last role, I was vice provost for research for the University of Chicago. So I did sort of all of the strategy and implementation of ways to increase research across the university. And I'm trying to I think one of the kind of an easy example of failures are the type of people that I brought in to my leadership team in the beginning. So this sort of touches on how you pick the right people. I picked somebody who I thought was just a forward-thinking, visionary leader that would really bring a lot of passion and ideas to the table. And once I hired this person, it became really clear, like within the first few days, that this person could not move anything from A to B, but could be really kind of 360 degrees above the ground, thinking about what we should be doing without the ability to actually move the needle forward. And so for me, that person was really fun to be around. I enjoyed having them on my team. But you don't need too many people who are bringing big ideas if they can't implement them.
Gotcha. I was curious, too, about mission-driven. In a way, that's sort of a buzzword, but it's very important to you and what you try to accomplish. So how do you define being mission-driven? But more importantly, how do you effectuate that mission? Put it into practice with your team?
Well, if you think about any kind of medical school, there's pretty much three missions of all schools. That is to think about education, research, and clinical kind of care. I add to that diversity and inclusion and also community engagement. And so I think it's pretty easy to think about the very core mission of what any medical school does. It's how you get there, which is important. So for instance, education, medical education and training the next generation of practitioners and scholars is really why I'm here. But what are the strengths around education at Penn State College of Medicine that differentiates us from our peers, but also is sort of an area of greatness that defines our strength? And so for us, it's sort of being able to train the next generation of humanistic physicians, being able to train physicians to be used to working within a health system around interdisciplinary teams, something that we call health sciences. And so health system science. So in terms of mission for education, that becomes very clear. It becomes easy. Those are some of our core strengths. How we operationalize kind of the rest of our curriculum is probably not as important as where we think our mission is to train these type of physicians for the future. I would say that for me, another part of our educational mission, and I'm just using this as one example, is to be able to put into the world physicians that want to practice in rural communities. There is just a paucity of people able to do that. And I think we're one of the schools where our mission needs to be include that.
Are the skill sets of the physician and the healthcare professionals of tomorrow, are they different than what they are today?
I think that the skill set's very different. First of all, it's a different type of learner. They have access to much more information than we did, which is helpful and sometimes hurtful. Sometimes that information is not exactly correct. But also they demand a different type of lifestyle and learning style that makes education a little bit more challenging. We were a very Socratic method, didactic sessions. We're just going to spoon feed you information and that's how you learn. This is a much more the learning here is much more collaborative, integrated with real world practice. I really think the next generation of physicians are much more prepared to face sort of real world challenges than we were.
Not to mention the technology that's obviously
changing
every day.
Yeah, and one of the things I think we may well have listeners on this one who are thinking of going into the medical profession and specifically applying to Penn State's College of Medicine. What kind of applicants are you looking for? Who is a great doctor, in your opinion?
Yeah, so I'm still learning this, but I would say that at the core of what we want in physicians are people that like people. And I know that's a really
strange—
Is that
what you meant by humanistic?
Yeah, you know, people that who—you know, I think particularly right now, technology and medicine, I mean, this is really—we're really heading that direction, and— AI-generated algorithms to help us think about how we prioritize patients and understand how to deliver better care. But at the core of what we're looking for are people who are grounded in being kind, respectful, that really love that human interaction. And you'd be surprised that there are people who are not like that. And I think that's the core of what makes Penn State College of Medicine so incredible are the people, whether it's the staff, the students, the faculty who've been there for so long, and the dedication to serving these populations. That's the type of person that we want at this school.
People definitely. Caring about people, definitely.
Yeah, and definitely we want smart, caring, kind bedside manners.
That's right.
as a consumer of
so
doctor
we can
services.
Be proud of our alumni.
That's
right?
Great.
Hey, Karen, we are asking all of our guests this season pretty much the same closing question, which is, what do you want to leave as your leadership legacy?
Yeah, I really want to, you know, so the work of a physician is really tough, you know, decreasing reimbursement for the services, lots and lots of debt. And so I want to inspire the next generation of future, you know, I would say scholars, practitioners, researchers who really have found sort of that passion in their belly, that North Star, and really aspire to make big contributions to the world. Because in the absence of that, this is a very, very tough job. I would also say that as a woman, and we are still a big minority in terms of leadership of deans, to inspire the women to see the possibility of leadership.
Well, you certainly are a great example. The first woman to head the Penn State College of Medicine, and also the first person, the first person of Asian descent, first
yeah,
woman
the
of
first
Asian
Korean American ever to lead a College of Medicine. I wear that proudly, but I say that I'm dean first, and a woman, and an Asian woman second.
There you go. There's the order. Well, that wraps up another fascinating episode. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Kim, and for sharing your insights. I'm Nell McCormack-Abaum.
I'm Jim Hohen, and this is C-Speak, the language of executives. Our guest today was Dr. Karen Kim, Dean at Penn State College of Medicine.
Thank you.
Well, thanks to our listeners who are out there for joining us for this episode of PNC C-Speak. You can find more episodes of C-Speak at WITF.org/C-Speak and on your favorite podcast platforms. Until next time.